live from downtown Chicago, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Stand by for a candidate invasion. Governor Kasich will be in town today. He's going to be out in, is it Lyle or Downers where Navistar is?
Lyle.
Is it Lyle?
Yeah.
And he's going to make a speech there, and then he has a second speech. I think it's North.
Palatine, I think.
Oh, Palatine, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. He called it Palestine.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Lyle and Palatine.
Well, you know, you get all over. You can't know every town's name. But at any rate, I hope everybody will give Kasich a serious listen and a look, because it's not just about who you elect. It's about what they can do once they're elected. Mr. Kasich knows who the players are, and I believe could actually get, and this is a crazy idea, I believe he actually could get Congress to do something. I know.
What?
I know you're saying, Steve, you shouldn't drink at this hour. But I believe Kasich could actually move the ball in that direction, and could actually get the ball moving a little bit in that direction. Now, here's the thing. Nobody's got more experience than Hillary Clinton. But Hillary Clinton has enough negativity with the hardcore right-wing faction of Congress that they may block her like they blocked Obama.
That could be, too.
So yes. Then what does Hillary have to do? Hillary, if she were president, would have to actually go to Capitol Hill and sit down with these people and go, look, you need this, I need that. So we got to meet in the middle. The old Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan strategy.
Have you seen the new Hillary commercials that are now playing in Illinois? I like them because they're positive. It's so, and I think all candidates should do this. Just focus on you, what you're going to do, because so many times don't you find that you watch these political ads and they're attacking someone. Steve Cochran did this. Steve Cochran did that. And I don't even know who the candidate is.
I don't know why they're mentioning me. That's the thing that really annoys me. But yeah, look, the negativity thing, which everybody thought this year would be different going into this year. In other words, last summer, everybody thought this campaign cycle would be different. We wouldn't have all the mudslinging. And then Big Don gets in. And all the mudslinging starts. Now, Trump's argument here is, I didn't start it. And you know what? He didn't. Kind of. He certainly started some of it. But he's the guy that will always finish it.
Oh, of course.
So because of that, the cycle boils up and it continues to boil up. The thing that was disappointing for anti-Trump folks, and I'm one of them. And by the way, not because I dislike Donald Trump. I've met him. I've interviewed him. I've spent some time on a golf course with him. He's an entertaining guy. But he's the kind of guy who, if you spend time with him or you interview him or you talk to him, you go, well, thank God that guy's never going to be president. He's just not equipped or fit for the job. And by the way, the job sucks. Here's the thing that people really need to understand. If you want to be president in 2016, this is what you're walking into. You're walking into a world that doesn't have the same affinity for doing business with the United States as they used to. In any other time, we've never had less capital to burn in the rest of the world. You're also walking into a job where you've got a Congress that now has 8 years under its belt of standing up to the president for things that matter and things that don't. You know, you got the Harry Reids and the Mitch McConnells of the world who just got in the way completely. You got a White House that was weakened over the last 8 years, some of it Obama's fault, some of it not. And you got somebody that's going to go in, if the Democrats actually get a president elected, they're going to get a president elected with less enthusiasm on the Democrat side than ever before. And that's one of the great threats, because the Republicans are turning out voters left and right, mm-hmm. huge numbers. The number one reason that Trump's doing as well as he is not just because people are pissed off. It's because the rest of the candidates suck. The rest of the field is terrible. The 17 candidates that were in the field originally weren't that great, really weren't good at all. And now you're down to the final three. And even though I think Kasich could make a very strong case to be a really strong president, I don't know that he's ever going to get there.
No, I agree.
He's got to win Ohio next week to stay relevant, and then it kicks it into the convention. The convention will be there at the convention, and the convention could be nuts. But the Republican Party in the White House is just as scary as the Democrats in the White House. Again, you can text me all day at 312-981-7200 and call me a left-wing weenie and a right-wing nut job. I'm here to tell you, I'm sick of both parties. They both scare me. Trump scares me the most. I don't trust Hillary. I'm with you. I'm going, who am I going to vote for? I'm going to find somebody. But here's what I know. Trump has no idea what he's getting into. None.
Trump also doesn't realize that you need the Congress to approve your ideas. You can't just say, you know what, I'm going to do this and it's going to happen. I'm going to snap my fingers because I'm president. And that maybe that's a lot of the egomania.
Because I'm big done.
I think that's a lot of ego, too. But
of course it's ego.
He doesn't realize that, you know, you need a lot of approval, a lot of thumbs up before you can do anything.
Now, here's the flip side. If Hillary can't get anything done, then why elect her? So that's the concern.
I wish I had an answer.
And look, here's the rest of it. If you elect Trump, are you willing then to be just as interested in the midterm elections and throw everybody out in Congress?
It's a good point because it could shift. It could shift in November.
Well, it's way less interesting. The midterms are way less interesting. Do you think there's 535 Donald Trumps out there that are going to excite you?
Probably not.
Well, if they were, we should round them up and jail them immediately.
I thought you were going to say, I hope not.
I don't know. I mean, I expected, yes, I really did. I didn't expect Bernie to win Michigan, but I expected that Trump would win Michigan. I expected that Trump would win Mississippi. So why am I bummed out today?
I don't know. Why are you bummed out? Because you still don't know who to vote for.
I don't know.
Someone said the other day, who do you vote for? It's choosing the lesser of all of the evils.
There's never been more evils.
But you have to vote.
Bernie Sanders later. We talked to him after the show later, and we'll play that back. And we'll talk about Bernie Sanders' new dating service based on what his wife told us yesterday on the
show.
And
you asked him about his game, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't have much. Hey, you hungry? Let's get some dinner.
Please, please me.
George Martin died yesterday. He was 90 years old. George Martin is the Beatles' most famous producer. I miss the Beatles. Now, and I don't mean I miss them as in I wish they were still here. They were great, obviously. But, I mean, I miss them as in I was, I think, 6 or 7 years old when they broke up. So they were ahead of my time. And I know the first record I ever had was a Beatles record.
Was it really?
Yeah, but it's not because I went, man, how great would it be if I got a Beatles record? I was 7. I just wanted any record. It could have been Sugar Sugar by the Archies.
Did your dad buy it for you?
I don't know where I got it. I think I may have taken it from one of my cousins or something. What do I know? As a little kid, I didn't know from thievery. Were you a Beatles nut?
Yeah, well, my first record also was a Beatles record. It was a 45. Yeah. It was I Want to Hold Your Hand. The flip side was I Saw Her Standing
Same
There.
Thing. And same thing, my first record.
There was a kid that I was in elementary school with whose father ran one of the arenas in town, or he was a promoter.
In D.C.
In D.C. And he was the guy who brought the Beatles to Washington.
Are you kidding?
So this was 1964. So I think I was in third grade, and this kid brought 45s to every kid in the third grade class. So
that's pretty cool.
Get us started young,
that's
right?
That's pretty cool. So. He's working it for dad.
Yep, exactly.
That's pretty cool. That's a good story. And the 45s, for you younger listeners,
a
45 is a piece of plastic that's about 7 and a half inches across mm-hmm. with a hole in the center. Hole in the center would take something that was called an adapter, and you would always lose the adapter.
Is that what those were called?
Yeah, they were called adapters. You would lose the adapter, and then you would have to try to perfectly center the 45 on your turntable so it wouldn't warble when you played it.
I haven't thought of doing that in years, but you're right.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. My husband still has his 45 record player.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I got to see if that thing works. It's awesome, though.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And vinyl's made a comeback.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not talking about the show on HBO. There are vinyl record stores again.
Didn't you love going to the record store?
Yeah, I used to like doing lots of stuff.
Okay. Mister.
There's lots of things I don't do.
Why is your son chuckling so much? Because
yeah. Sometimes he knows too much. So at any rate, George Martin, 90 years old, very, very accomplished. I guess I didn't realize he was that much older than the Beatles. I thought he was, you know, the Beatles were 22 and he was 30, that kind of thing. But George Martin would have been looking at 40 about the time the Beatles really hit, right? Based on the math. Started producing records for EMI and a label called Parlophone back in 1950, when he really was just a kid. He would have been 25-ish then, I guess. Worked with Peter Sellers and others. Did Peter Sellers sing, the actor?
I don't remember that.
Peter Sellers?
Yeah.
The Pink Panther?
Yeah.
Oh.
Marta had its first number one hit with a band called the Temperance Seven. Temperance, huh? Wasn't the temperance movement keeping people from drinking? Wasn't that the temperance movement?
No.
No, yes. I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah, it was?
The women's Christian temperance.
Yeah,
years.
That was during
Prohibition
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was that like?
I don't know. Let's go to Dave on it. Okay. And, but you were cranky that whole time. George Martin was in the record business for 70 years. 70 years. Never called himself the Fifth Beatle, though some other people threw that title on him. And produced some of the most popular albums in history. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Revolver, Rubber Soul, Abbey Road. And you could make the argument he took rock LPs to a new art form. Was inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame in 1999. 3 years prior to that, he was knighted by the Queen. Pretty good career. Let's see. He also worked with Jeff Beck, Elton John, Celine Dion, a bunch of solo albums with Paul McCartney. Haven't seen anything from Paul McCartney on George Martin yet, but he was always in charge, though he always listened to the boys. He always called them the boys. Always listened to the boys. He chose Love Me Do as their first single. And initially, confining the newly hired Ringo Starr to just tambourine, he eventually decided Ringo is a pretty good drummer. Let's let him hit those over there.
Hit those being the drums?
Yeah. So, you know, just a really cool career. I never met him, never talked to him, but George Martin, the legendary producer of the Beatles, passed away at 90. That's a pretty good run. 90's a pretty good run.
And a great career.
And a great career. So at 626, thought you should know that to start your day so you can go and impress people with how smart you are. Karen Conti's coming up. We'll talk about some legal items in the news. Dave, are you watching the O.J. Simpson miniseries?
I've watched the first. I'm behind on it, but I was watching it.
Last night I caught, and I've not seen much of it, but last night I caught like 10 minutes of it. And I can't think of the actress's name that's playing Marcia Clark. She's a character actress. She's done a million things. But last night there was maybe the 10 minutes I saw, I would say 10 minutes of the 10 minutes I saw were about her getting a haircut. I don't remember, and obviously it was about a double murder, but I don't remember that being a big part of the story that Marcia Clark got a haircut.
No, I don't either.
Sarah Paulson?
Sarah Paulson.
Is that you thinking
Mary, about? You're watching, Mary Skaggs, you're watching this? Mary Skaggs. I just said you married Jason in production. Mary Sandberg.
I am not married to Jason.
I wish you'd invited us to the wedding.
I know, sorry about that.
Sarah Paulson, now you're not old enough to remember the Simpson trial.
I am. In 1994, when he was caught, I had just graduated high school, and my whole family had mono, and so we were sick the night of the Bronco chase. So we just sat
around watching.
Yeah. And
all
then
right, do you remember the hair thing being a big deal?
I do, very much so, because her hair is so bad. And then when she got the haircut, it was like a really big deal in the news. That she did different hair. So.
Like, the headlines are real. The headlines, like, in the New York Post.
Yeah.
You know, murder, and it was her haircut.
Yeah.
She was angry, too. I mean, because she was obviously a lawyer, and they were focusing so much on her hair. Like, the Inquirer and all those.
The same thing happened with, Felicity when she got her haircut. You just don't do it.
And then, do you remember when Felicity killed two people?
Or Jennifer Aniston.
I mean, it all comes full circle. It's 6:28. Let's take a break, come back, get you the big story in a moment, and then continue. Oh, later, Chris Collins, first coach ever at Northwestern to take a basketball team to 20-plus wins, I'm going to say, Dave, because there's going to be more.
Yeah, they've never won more than 20.
They're about to.
They're about to.
Yeah. Kim Fox live in studio later. Bernie Sanders later as well. And the radio debut of my first grandchild, Abigail Grace, later on as well. Right now, she's in makeup. This is 720 WGN.
It's free lawyer time. Karen Conti is on. It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
6:41 now. K Conti Law. That's all over social media. At K Conti Law. That's how you can stay in touch with Karen. And good morning to you, Karen Conti.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
If I ever have, you know, I have, of course, hundreds of sex tapes that I've made. And if any of those ever get out, can I hire you to represent me like the Hulk Hogan situation?
I don't know that embarrassment is really a cause of action, but yes, I would definitely represent you.
All right. Before I want to talk about Aaron Andrews, because I think the case has a lot of interesting angles to it. And I don't mean that in the way you think I mean it. But the Hulk Hogan thing as well is the other big salacious case that's out there. And I think there's some confusion about this. Is I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong because you're the attorney. As I understand it, Hulk Hogan is suing because the tape was released, and he's put himself in this position to have the tape played. In other words, he's trying to make money off this. Is that accurate?
I think it is. I mean, there is a sex tape with a woman who's married to some other celebrity.
Well, I wouldn't call him a celebrity. He's a radio personality named Bubba the Love Sponge, who became friends with Hulk Hogan. And Hulk's story is for 2 years tried to convince Hulk to have sex with his wife.
Okay.
Who among us hasn't done that?
They run in a different crowd. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have sex on this video. And, you know, the interesting part is, you know, he's suing for breach of privacy. And what's interesting about this case is that for a guy like him who runs around with very little clothing on, who talks about his body parts and his prowess constantly, everywhere anyone will listen to him, now says that the airing of this is a breach of his privacy. So the question is, yeah, First Amendment right, we have a right to publish whatever we want, but there's that limit when you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And does Hulk Hogan ever have that expectation of privacy given who he is? That's a question for the jury.
I don't I don't have any extra grind with Hulk Hogan. I've never been in a sex tape with him, and I never will be. But I do think there's an important outcome of this case, and that is whether you're a celebrity, whether you're an individual, does a website like Gawker have the right to take something that's been leaked to them and then turn it over to the public for public consumption when it's someone being naked? It sort of ties in a weird way into this Aaron Andrews thing, because that's never going to be off the Internet. Because I think if you don't shut down this, if Hulk Hogan doesn't win this case in some way, if there's not some threat to Gawker and Deadspin and other people, then what's to stop them from putting out Dave Ennett's sex tape or anybody else's sex tape?
Right. It's a great point.
Or Bob walking down the street.
Right. And to make the argument that because Hulk Hogan is a person who flaunts his sexuality, that he doesn't have a right to privacy, that rubs me the wrong way, because everyone has a right to privacy. It doesn't matter who you are and what your persona is. When it comes down to who you really are, you don't expect to have your sexual activities be broadcast. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a celebrity who's bare at all. It's this Pam Anderson argument. You know, I've done it. Yes, I've been naked in front of the world. But when it comes to my videotape, that was not meant for public viewing.
Isn't that really the great argument that goes on with this type of thing and celebrity? And you could argue it both ways. But the notion that because you're famous, you don't have the same rights.
Yeah, and there are rights, and I think it's just escalated a little bit. There's an example of a lawsuit where a woman agreed to have her C-section videotaped for educational purposes. Well, then they took it and they put it on the web, you know, as, you know, sort of an educational thing. But here she was, you know, giving birth and had being operated on, and the court said, yeah, she had a reasonable expectation of privacy, even though she gave up some of it for a certain limited purpose. You can't just take that and say, well, now she has no right, and now we have to watch her on YouTube give birth to a baby. So, you know, I think it's the same exact argument. When we have the celebrity issues, it gets clouded because we don't know who celebrities are. We kind of have a persona of who they are, but they really are real people. I mean, they're real people who have real privacy issues, and I'm not saying I feel super sorry for them, and maybe their damages are less because they already have exposed themselves in some ways, but I still think they have a cause of action and a right to their privacy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. What's more important? Because you could certainly go, well, Hulk Hogan was cheating on his wife. He had sex with his best friend's wife, whether it was at the insistence of his best friend or not. He engaged in an incredibly risky behavior that probably the majority of people would find amoral and disgusting. But by the same token, if he loses this case, then to me, all bets are off until somebody wins one down the road. And Gawker can do whatever they want. And the Gawker, by the way, the same people that have outed homosexuals who had no intention of explaining their lifestyle because of some lame connection. Oh, well, he's the mayor of this, or he's the head of this company, or whatever the case may be. What right do the websites have to go into people's personal lives on that level? I don't think they do.
Well, and it's exacerbated because we have people who are always willing to sign these videos and get paid for them.
Right.
I think
there's a lot of bad people in the world.
Well, even the Aaron Andrews guy, I mean, he was a creep, but he was trying to sell that video. I mean, he was trying to make money on it. And there's always someone who's going to buy it, and there's always somebody who's going to watch it. So, you know, it's a slippery slope, and our First Amendment is a wonderful thing. But I think there is a bright line that we can draw. If you're in your own bedroom and you're not consenting to have this thing videotaped, you should have that right to privacy. Even if you like to videotape it for your own use, you know, that's your prerogative.
And the whole argument about whether or not you should be taping yourself having sex is not germane here, even though I certainly could make an argument that 99% of people shouldn't. The rest of you are already in business.
Yeah, that's another show. Ro Khan's going to do that one.
Oh, is he doing that one? Oh, sorry, Ro. 6:47, Karen mentioned Aaron Andrews. We'll take that up in a moment. But first, it's time for Mary to update your traffic trouble spots. What do you have, Mary? Definitely call Hochberg. You did.
I am so happy I did.
I just finished paying off my house, which was tough because when I first came to Chicago more than 20 years ago, there was this guy named Vinny Boom Boom Knuckles Bambasini. Mm-hmm. And it was Vinny Boom Boom's House of Mortgages. And I think I got in at 27%. It just seemed high at the time, but I needed a mortgage.
Not a good rate.
Needed Hochberg. Karen Conti's with us. Let's talk about Aaron Andrews. Aaron Andrews was awarded a jury verdict of a decision, if you will, $55 million, more than half of that, against a creep who stalked her and taped her naked in a reverse peephole at a Marriott hotel in Nashville. The 49% of the judgment goes against the Marriott hotel there. How much of that money will she ever see?
Well, there's a lot of things that can happen between now and settlement. First of all, this is not the Marriott International chain. This is the local franchise, because that national company was kicked out of the lawsuit because basically the security issues relate only to that franchise. So, you know, they're probably the hotel is going to go to the judge and say, let's reduce this. It's ridiculous. Remember the McDonald's verdict. It was millions of dollars, and the trial judge reduced it, saying there was no good evidence to hit them for that much. So it could be reduced at that point, and then there's going to be an appeal if this matter goes forward. So there's going to be a 2-year appeal. Whether they're going to try to collect in the interim remains to be seen. My guess would be that they're all going to sit down and try to settle this. Okay, it makes sense to say, listen, Aaron, you got your big verdict. You made your point. We're changing our procedures and our safeguards here. Accept X amount of dollars, and everything will go away. My guess is that's what's going to happen.
All right, now let's bright side this for a second. The dirty pervert who did the reverse people operation. He goes to jail. He serves his time. He comes out. He changes his life. He's now 10 years down the road, and he really is a different person. Is he on the financial hook for this for the rest of his life? Because here's a guy who, I guarantee you, wouldn't be able to make $28 million bucks, or the $27 million that he owes Aaron Andrews for the rest of his life. So what do they do about that settlement?
Well, interestingly, people say he would go bankrupt, but he can't, because this is an intentional act. It's actually a criminal act. So you can never get that discharged in bankruptcy, very much like the O.J. Simpson civil case, where the parties can really, I mean, they can go after him in, you know, forever and try to collect. Now, will Aaron Andrews use her energy to try to do that? I doubt it. I doubt she's going to, you know, put a lien on his car and in his house. He's probably got nothing anyway because of all the criminal actions, and he's probably not going to get a good job in the future. I think this is going to be deterrent enough for her to say, good, I got what I wanted. I'm changing the policies in this country on hotel safety, and the guy is going to, you know, basically be poor the rest of his life.
Is a judgment in a civil case taxable?
It is.
So that's a big hit, too.
It is a big hit. But, you know, with $55 million, I think I could pay taxes on that. But some of it will be deemed not to be. And usually what you do at that point when you get a big personal injury cause of action settlement, you're going to want to get a good accountant to say, yes, this percentage is taxable. And, you know, what percentage is not.
Well, look, she's already making a lot of money. She didn't do this because of the money. And, again, I don't know Aaron Andrews, but I certainly feel badly for what she's gone through. And I salute her for standing up and doing what she's doing, because to dredge all this stuff up again is a big deal.
Well, it is. And I know a lot of people are offended that there's a statistic that the wrongful death, average wrongful death verdict is about $3 million. So here she gets 55, and people are saying that's not fair. But I think what we have to look at is the jury spoke. The jury was angry. Obviously, they got the argument that we could have done just some real minor things here to prevent this from happening. And this could have been a worse situation. This could have been rape. It could have been murder. And listen, the policies in the hotel industry have changed, and they're going to change. And if there's one good thing about this, if you're even if you're angry with the large verdict, we're going to have safer hotels, and I think that's a good thing.
Before you leave, Karen Conti at K Conti Law, how do people get a hold of you?
Oh, you can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
A couple of weeks ago, we announced we had a criminal on staff, Mary Sandberg, who's helping produce the program because she was going 195 in a hospital zone. I thought that was the only criminal we had. Turns out there's another one.
Is it Dave?
Can we use a fake name?
Grzanich.
Oh, gosh.
Grzanich. Well, that sounds like a fake name. Grzanich, what'd you do?
I have received a jury summons, and I misread the date on it.
Oh, yeah, sure you did. That's what they all say on the inside. Everybody's innocent inside prison.
I have had bigger things on my mind, and so I thought it said March 13th, but it said March 3rd.
So you ignored it. You ignored your civic duty.
No, it was on my refrigerator. I knew it. Okay. I was even talking to the boss about it getting time off.
Tell it to your attorney. Conti, what do you think?
You know, that's a problem. Did you get a little summons for your bad behavior? What you should do is you should call, but you should also write. You should call the number on that jury summons and say that you made that mistake, that you want to serve because it is your civic duty, and that you are welcoming the next jury summons. But I would also put it in writing, because you don't want to get that summons to say that you're going to be held in contempt for not exercising your duty, because they take this very seriously.
Yeah, because you're supposed to show up, Steve.
I heard there was also a fine. Is there a fine as well?
Generally, there isn't if it was an honest mistake, but I think you need to be proactive. And like I said, you know, have it be that you're putting this in writing. When you call over there, it gets lost, and then they automatically, the computer generates these types of things. So unless you have something on record, you could get in trouble for it. And I've seen people get in trouble for it. They take it seriously, and they should. And listen, everyone should go to jury duty. It's, you know, it's a day where you sit there with your Kindle and your newspapers, and you can read all day. Or you get picked for a jury, and it's always an interesting experience.
I've done it twice. I've served on juries twice. Very interesting experience.
I did a civil trial. I thought it was
fantastic. Did a criminal and a civil.
Fascinating.
I've actually was on a criminal trial before. Worst come to worst, does it help that I actually was telling my boss that I needed that time off?
No, listen, none of your cockamamie excuses help, Steve. Here's the deal, Steve. You are going to jail, and you're going to serve your time. We will set up a microphone in there. It'll be great for the show. So I think there's a win-win here.
Okay.
So, all right, but Karen's not kidding. Write your sorry excuse down and call as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Karen.
Then thanks for confessing, Steve. I think you're a better person because you confessed. Karen, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye. At K Conti Law, back with the 7 o'clock news in a moment from the convict on 720 WGN. Senator Bernie Sanders joins us, and nice to have you on the program, Senator. We had a chance to talk to your wife. What a delightful woman she is.
Well, you talk to the brains in the family. Now you got the other guy, so.
You know, one of the things I asked her was, when you originally met her, if you had game, and, you know, when you were, did you hit on her? And she said, yes, you did. And your approach, your flirt line was, hey, are you hungry?
That's true. That's right.
So much for the Bernie dating video.
Right.
All right, so listen, I am fascinated by your rise here. And, again, I talked to your wife about this a little bit, and I think she shares that equal fascination. But one thing I really respect about you is I believe everything you say, everything that comes out of your mouth, you believe. And I don't know anybody else in politics like that. So I salute you for that.
Well, it's very kind of you, and I thank you very much. You know, obviously we have competed in many, many primaries and caucuses. We've now won 8 of them, but the one, in a certain sense, that's most gratifying was one of my own home state. To speak to your point, we won that caucus primary, actually, say something that when the people who know you best, and in Vermont they know me pretty well, give you 86%, it maybe speaks to the point you just made, is that not everybody in Vermont agrees with me, but they know that I've been consistent and they know that I've been honest in the fights that I've waged, and I believe what I say.
And this is not new stuff for you, if I believe our mutual friend, Senator Durbin. Now, we know Senator Durbin supporting Hillary, but you guys in the Senate, you know, your colleagues, obviously.
Yes, we are. And I have a lot of respect and affection for Dick Durbin. He's a good friend of mine and an excellent senator for the people of Illinois.
But he said the same thing. And the interesting thing he said a week or two ago when he was on the show, he goes, there's nothing Bernie has said, and this goes to the consistency. He said, there's nothing Bernie has said on the campaign trail that I haven't heard him yell at me at lunch about over the last 30 years, or the last several years.
That's true. Look, what I have always believed is that we have got to create an economy that works for all of us. And that way, when we have an economy today in which the top one-tenth of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, when 20 people own more wealth than the bottom 150 million people, when the average American is working longer hours for low wages and almost all new income and wealth is going to the top 1%, you know what? You could be a conservative, you could be a progressive, you could be anything you want to be. But that type of economy is not the kind of economy we need here in the United States of America. And that's what I've been saying for a long time, and that's what I'm saying today. And the other thing that I've been talking about is I believe in democracy. You want to disagree with me, you want to vote against me, that's fine. That's part of what America is about. But you don't have the right to buy elections just because you're a billionaire. And that's why I believe we've got to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision and actually move to public funding of elections. I want a vibrant democracy. I want us to have more people voting percentage-wise than any other country on earth, not one of the lowest voter turnouts. So these are themes that I have been talking about in Vermont for decades. Dick Durbin has heard me talk about it, in the sense the American people now are beginning to hear me talk about it.
Yeah, and to your point about the election mess in this country, this is my words, not yours. There's a reason that Donald Trump can exist in this crazy system that we have. This doesn't have to take a year. This doesn't have to cost $1 billion for the winners of both parties' nominations. It's ridiculous. It's a colossal waste of money, and there's got to be a better way to do it. And I hope if anything comes out of this election process is that the system needs to be blown up. The problem, Senator, and you know this, is the people that have benefit most from this system are the ones making the rules, and they would be the ones that would have to change it.
Well, I think you are absolutely right. And the facts are pretty clear. I live 50 miles away from the Canadian border in Burlington, Vermont. They have an election, I think it takes them 3 months from beginning to end. And throughout Europe, it's the same thing. This thing goes on and on, and it becomes a marathon race.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the winner ends up indicating and showing the country that he or she has more endurance than the opponents, but not necessarily the qualifications to be president of the United States. You're right. It is a pretty crazy process. And the other thing, and your point is right, spot on, why does it cost more than $1 billion to become president of the United States? And who's going to fund that $1 billion? Now, one of the differences between Secretary Clinton and myself is I have chosen not to have a super PAC. She has several super PACs. She's raising millions of dollars from Wall Street. My average contribution is $27. We have 5 million individual campaign contributions. But we have got to change our campaign finance system. It is corrupt. Billionaires are now having incredible influence. Number two, as you've indicated, we've got to change the political process. And let me go on record here as telling you I will do everything that I can to end this voter suppression, the effort on the part of Republican governors to actually make it harder for people to participate in the political process. We are going to make it easier, not harder. I want to see a large voter turnout, not a low voter turnout.
It's Bernie Sanders. It's an interview you and I, Andrea, did yesterday with the senator right after the show. And he addresses Michigan in a forward-thinking way and not so much so confident.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up this morning after winning Michigan. Anyway, Bernie Sanders part two coming up in a second. It's 7:18. Mary has your traffic trouble spots.
Senator, you have amazing support among the young voters. And since 2008, there have been a record number of younger voters turning out to vote in primaries and the general elections as well. What do you think, what to attribute all of the youth vote, the younger support that you've been getting? I mean, we saw it in Iowa and New Hampshire, and feel the burn. I mean, the momentum that you have.
Well, I think two reasons. So, by the way, it is not just young people. It is young people. You're right. But it's also working class people. I think what the polls indicate and what some of the exit polls and elections are indicating is that we're doing very well for working class people as well. I think there are two reasons. And I should tell you, by the way, that when we began this campaign, I had no idea that this would be happening. It's as big a surprise to me, frankly, as it is to anybody else. But it is true. And I think there are two reasons. Number one, almost by definition, young people are idealistic. And they look at this world and they say, why is it that so few have so much and so many have so little? And that's not right. They look at issues like institutional racism and a broken criminal justice system. Look at issues like sexism and why women are making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. They look at climate change and they say, how can it be Republicans deny what the entire scientific community is saying, that climate change is real and caused by human activity? And that's one thing. It is the idealism of young people. The second thing is, it's very personal to them. If we do not change this economy, the young people, in all likelihood, will have a lower standard of living than their parents for the first time in the modern history of America. And some of these kids are going to be graduating school $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. And they ask me, why is it? You tell us to go out and get an education. You tell us that America needs the best educated workforce in the world. And then we end up $80,000 in debt and we're paying off that debt for decades. Is that right? And the answer is no. It's absurd. It is not right. So I think the issues that we've been raising, plus the idealism of the young people, is why we're doing so well.
Well, one of my major beefs with the last two presidents, because I'm tired of both parties, is that you're not elected president of the Democrats or president of the Republicans. You're elected president of the United States. So for people who hear your message and think it's too strident or too left, how are you going to deal with the Republicans if you win the job?
First of all, I don't think it's quote-unquote too left. I think on every issue we have talked about, you get beyond labels, get beyond left and right and all that stuff. Let's talk about it. I want to raise the minimum wage to a living wage. You know what? Overwhelming majority of Americans agree with that. I want to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. Is there anybody in America who is not shocked and disgusted by what's going on in Flint, Michigan, where children are being poisoned with lead in the water? Now, Flint may be the worst case, but this is going on all over the country in terms of deteriorating water systems. In my state, we have many bridges which are collapsing, true all over America. We got a rail system, used to be the best in the world. It no longer is. You got levees and dams, airports that need repair. Anyone think that's a good idea? I want to invest $1 trillion to rebuild our infrastructure, put 13 million people to jobs, to back to work. People overwhelmingly support that idea. Public colleges and universities, putting a tax on Wall Street speculation so that we can make public colleges and universities tuition free, overwhelmingly supported by the American people. Pay equity for women. Does anyone think it's right that women are making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men? No, I don't think so. People agree with that. Climate change. Well, I know my Republican colleagues think climate change is a hoax, but the entire scientific community strongly disagrees with them and sees climate change is one of the great threats to our planet.
So the larger point is here, there's plenty of bipartisan stuff to work with, and you don't hate Republicans.
Of course I don't hate Republicans.
Right, but I think it needs to be said out loud, you know, because that's the type of thing that people can paint you with and that type of broad brush. I know we're out of time, but Andrea, one last question for Senator Sanders.
Senator, if you get the nomination or if Hillary gets the nomination, how do you beat Donald Trump?
Well, the last poll I've seen here in Michigan, for example, has me 22 points ahead of Trump in Michigan. That's true in many other states. Nationally, CNN had a poll that had us 12 points ahead of Trump. And by the way, in most instances, my lead over Trump is larger than Clinton's. Look, I don't think the American people want to elect a president like Trump who insults Mexicans, who insults Muslims, who led the so-called birth movement, insulting the entire African-American community, trying to delegitimize President Obama. I don't think they want a president who's trying to divide us up. And I think our message, our agenda, will in fact resonate with the American people. and will be one that will lead to a very large victory.
Senator Bernie Sanders, he is running hard in Illinois like he is throughout the Midwest over the next couple of weeks. Safe travels, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
It's Bernie Sanders, not Jackie Mason, as one of the texters suggested. He does do a pretty good Jackie Mason, though.
Mm-hmm.
He really does.
He does.
some texters. Steve, I know you're not a particular Sanders fan, but as always, I appreciate your having him on and respecting his time and comments. You clearly make an effort at this. Thank you. No, thank you. 912, get rid of the minimum wage. Make these people get out and work. As long as you have minimum wage and you raise it, more people will sit home and do nothing. Not entirely fair. You don't get the minimum wage for doing nothing. You get the minimum wage for working.
Right.
However, the idea you could raise it to $15 and have no impact on small and medium-sized businesses is blind. Let's see. More texters. A lot of texters, as a matter of fact. 815, can you ask Bernie the plan for his free college idea? Who will pay for the free college? Thank you. Let me tell you the reason I didn't do that is because the free college question has been beaten to death. He claims the money will come from a tax on the wealthiest people in the country. There is an argument, including at the Office of Budget Management, the bipartisan office. What's the name of the office? Why am I forgetting this? There's a bipartisan government office that manages the budget, and their statistical argument is that there's not enough money from the rich folks to pay for free college for everybody. And from the 312, morning, Steve. I respectfully disagree with your concerns about Trump in this Republican primary. I think as a business person, he understands to get things accomplished and to reach a deal, there has to be an agreement between the two sides. I think the much more scary candidate is Ted Cruz. He's already shown to what extremes he would go, including shutting down the government. Trump has already signaled he would moderate his positions as to what he said to his base during the primary. Sorry, this texture thing is always a problem. For Trump to be a viable candidate in the general election, he has to pick an experienced and respected person for VP like John Kasich, not a nut job like Palin. Thanks, Ron in Chicago. That's a great text. Really is a great text, and it's well thought out. Here's my concern, and my concern remains the same. I don't believe Donald Trump is mentally fit to be president. He's thin-skinned. He's reactionary. And 90% of the comments he makes are not about what good he can do in substance for the people of this country. It's about how well he's doing. Everyone who wants to be president has to be a narcissist on every level. In the same way that everybody that wants to be in show business has to be narcissistic in some way. And Donald Trump may be the king of that club. I am concerned about his ability to not be manipulated by people who compliment him, and to not be pushed into a reactionary response that could literally cost lives and certainly billions and billions of dollars to this country by people who criticize them. Now, think about how he reacts to criticism. There is no job in the world that gets more criticism than the president of the United States. Every single day, you can listen, watch, and read people who think you're an idiot, and worse, they'll insult you, they'll insult your family. Tell me what you've seen from Donald Trump in the last few months that gives you confidence that he'd be able to handle that.
Very reactionary.
729. Big story coming up also. Chris Collins from the Northwestern Wildcats, who are on the way to having their best season in hoops ever, even with all the injuries. Hawkopedia later, and Kim Fox wants to be the replacement for Anita Alvarez.
Yes, Cook County State's attorney.
And she'll be on live in studio after 9. Most importantly on this show today, Abigail Grace Cochran will be making her first appearance. And she is 11 weeks tomorrow or 12? 11 weeks old tomorrow.
Do you have all your questions written out for her?
I'm a little nervous. We're vetting her right now.
Did she have demands for the green room too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she absolutely did.
As she should.
No strange peas! The Bernie Sanders interview in full up in podcast right now, wherever you consume your podcast. We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN. My daughter, Amy Cochran, came up with an idea a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was very inspired when she suggested we apologize to the Queen for that whole little 1776 dust-up.
dust-up.
In the event that we might have to go back.
The Revolutionary War?
Yeah. She also had a great follow-up idea, and the follow-up idea was to contact our London bureau chief, Paul Coit, and to see what sort of citizenship he attempted to say tests we would have to take to get back in good graces with the UK. Good morning, Mr. Coit.
Good morning. How are you? Very nice to speak to you. I hope you're well.
I'm doing fine. How are you? And how are my Tottenham Hotspur?
Tottenham Hotspur have had a couple of bad runs. Drew with Arsenal. Got beaten by West Ham. But still in second place. So it could be worse, but it could be a little better.
So they got to run the table here. Well, in our terms, run the table. They got to run the rest of the schedule here. Win their last six, seven, eight games to win the title.
Exactly. They have to run round the table. That's exactly what they have to do. Is that right?
We both speak English, but they're completely different languages.
True.
Paul's on social media, at Coity, C-O-Y-T-E-Y. All right, so what I would like you to do, if you don't mind, is give us sample questions from the British citizenship test to see if we've even got a chance to get back in.
Okay, well, listen, I've managed to get hold of the actual 2016 test. Be careful. We'll keep it to ourselves. I do have 10 questions from the test. You just tell me when you want to stop, but I've got plenty for you. So whenever you're ready.
Here's how I suggest we do this. You go through the questions. Yeah. We all answer them by writing down our answers.
Yeah, no cheating.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to write down our answers. I'm turning over the show rundown sheet, and I'm going to write down my answer to each of these questions. Mary? Oh, Mary apparently has quit the show.
I'm here. I didn't know which Mary you're talking to.
Seventh floor Mary.
Yes.
Write down your answers.
Okay.
And Grzanich is not involved because he's already been taken away by the authorities for ignoring his jury duty summons. All right. So we have 10 questions. And then once these 10 questions are written down, Paul will go over the answers and we'll see if any of us get in. And by the way, if you get in and I don't, I'll visit you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And
nice.
No Googling.
Is this history involved in this?
Yes. And no.
All right.
Take your
UK.
Is it
the UK? What is this called? Is it the UK citizenship test?
Yeah, the official United Kingdom and Northern Ireland citizenship test.
All right. Question number one.
For me to say. Yeah.
Question number one
is. See, it's. Well, I'll just ask the question and then we'll see afterwards. What is the last letter of the alphabet? What is the last letter of the alphabet?
No Googling.
Question number one.
No Googling. What is the last letter of the alphabet?
Yes.
I've written down my answer. Question number two.
Question number two. Who was not born in London? I repeat, who was not born in London? A, Charlie Chaplin.
Okay.
B, Audrey Hepburn.
Okay.
C, Jerry Springer. Or D, Bob Hope.
Oof.
Which one of those four was not born in London?
Give me the choices one more time.
A, Charlie Chaplin.
Yes.
B, Audrey Hepburn.
Right.
C, Jerry Springer.
Uh-huh.
D, Bob Hope.
Wow.
Monsters of show business, all of them.
I've narrowed it down to two.
You have to pick one, actually. You have to choose just one. All right, I've written down my answer. By the way, I announce I've written down my answer because I will write down my answer at whatever point the answer comes to me. And you guys have to be done by then. I am the timer.
That sounds fair.
Question three.
Question number three. Where might you see a googly? Where might you see a googly? Mm-hmm. Is it A, at London Zoo?
Mm-hmm.
Is it B, at a cricket match?
Mm-hmm.
Is it C, at a famed London Indian restaurant? Or D, an optician's? Where might you see... Do you call them opticians, by the way?
Yes, we do.
People that make glasses for people.
Optometrists.
Are they opticians? You call them opticians?
Opticians, optometrists, sure.
Yeah, is that one of the questions?
No, that's not one of the questions. That's not the optometrist question is not a question. Question,
an extra point, though, for that.
Question four.
Who is the head of the Church of England? Is it A, the Queen? B, the Archbishop of Canterbury? Is it C, the Pope? Or D, the Prime Minister? Who is the head of the Church of England? A, the Queen. B, Archbishop of Canterbury. C, the Pope. Or D, the Prime Minister?
See, I thought it was Monty Python.
That's not a choice.
That's not. Okay.
I thought it was Benny Hill.
And
please,
question...
Please take this seriously.
Question five.
Question five. What do you have in your tea after you have removed the tea bag? What do you have in your tea? A cup of tea after you have removed the tea bag. Is it A, just water? Do you have B, milk? Do you have C, cream, or D, lemon? So what do you have in your tea after you've removed the tea bag? Do you add just water? Do you add milk? Do you add cream, or do you add lemon?
All right.
No, I got one right.
Can I just say there is only one right answer to that question?
Yes, I know.
I argue, but there's only one right
answer. And I can tell you, if I get this one wrong, Paul will no longer be my friend because he's made me. He has made me a cup of tea.
But you'll go visit him.
I have made you a cup of tea.
Yeah. All right, that's the first half. The final five questions to determine if we are even eligible to return to the U.K. Pending the outcome of this election. Those final five questions after Mary does her traffic trouble spots right now.
We have trouble spots inbound Eisenhower in hour 25 from 53 and hour 10 from Mannheim. Outbound accident has been cleared at Western, but still 50 out to 53. 50 on the inbound Stevenson from the Tri-State. Hour 15 on the inbound Kennedy from O'Hare. 40 in the Locals Express at 32 and outbound at the airport. 46 about a half hour outbound in the Edens to Lake Cook Road. Some heavy delays now. 294 between 55 and 290. And Lawrence to North Avenue on Lakeshore Drive. Traffic sponsored by PowerShare Series. This PowerShare Series coming to you IC Pavilion Friday, April 8th. Andre Agassi, John McEnroe, Jim Courier, and James Blake. Three matches, one winner, one night only. Tickets are on sale now at PowerShareSeries.com. Mary Vanderbilt, WG on Traffic Central.
We're taking the UK citizenship test with Paul Coy. What is question number six?
Question number six is, what do you do if someone bumps into you on the street? Do you A, ignore it?
Yes.
Do you B, say, excuse me? Do you C, apologize profusely? Or do you D, swear at the offending person?
If you have ever listened to Paul Coit on this show, you have to know the answer to that question. Question seven.
Question number seven. How do we pronounce aluminum? How do we pronounce the correct pronunciation, I should say, of aluminum?
All right.
Hold on.
How do we write
how
this
do we,
down?
Yeah, how do we? Well, you have to figure. You have to listen to him.
Think about it. If you know the answer, it's quite simple. Yeah. It's quite simple.
Yeah, is it really multiple choice?
No, this is.
I have written down the answer, and it looks like five separate syllables.
I think I have. And that,
yeah, yeah. Well, you may have combined one, but I mean, I think we're on the same page. Question eight.
Question number eight. What is so special about John O'Groats?
Wait, you dropped out.
Special.
Yes.
About John O'Groats.
John O'Groats.
John O apostrophe goat groats. John O'Groats.
Wow, can we get a hint on who that is?
It may not be a person. Well, it might have been a person, but it's not specifically a person.
What is so special about John O'Groats?
John O'Groats.
Spell O'Groats again?
O, it's John O apostrophe G-R-O-A-T-S. If anybody says John O'Groats, you would go, it's a place. I'll tell you that, it's a place. But what's so special about that place?
Question nine, because I know I just got one wrong.
I got one wrong, too.
Yeah.
How many time zones are there in the United Kingdom?
Wow.
Is it A, one? Is it B, two? Is it C, nine? Or D, three?
Okay.
This is getting tricky now.
And question 10.
And finally, question number 10, what or who is the Grand National? What or who is the Grand National? Is it A, is it Her Majesty the Queen? Is it B, London? Is it C, a theater? Or D, or a horse race? What or who is the Grand National? Is it A, the Queen, B, London, C, theater, or D, horse race?
I feel pretty good about my answers.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about my answers. What is passing? Would seven be passing six? What is passing?
Passing would be, I think, probably seven. Seven is a low pass.
Yeah, 7 out of 10. By the way, congratulations to Paul Coy. Those are good questions.
They are very Paul.
Really good questions.
Very good questions.
Very, very seriously.
I've never been there, so don't I get a freebie?
No.
A couple freebies?
No, absolutely not. We're not just letting anybody back in.
Man.
And we'll be back after this to Paul, and Paul will grade us and determine whether or not we're even eligible to return at 7:52. Steve Cochran Show, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on 720 WGN. That's good. One of my favorite Beatles songs, and it's just dumb. George Martin passed away at 90, the longtime Beatles producer.
Love, love, Beatles.
Back to my friend Paul Coy. Condolences on the loss of George Martin.
Yeah, 90 years old. You know, ironically, the song that you're playing was the first song, Love Me Do, and Ringo never actually played on the original one because George didn't think he was a good enough drummer.
How about that?
So he wasn't on it.
He was the tambourine guy, wasn't he?
Well, you know he wasn't even the tambourine. He had to go off to go to have a cup of tea somewhere.
And we'll get to cup of tea in a second. All right, so here's the way we'll grade this. You repeat the question, starting with number one. I'll give my answer. Everybody else will compare it, and you'll laugh or tell us we're right. Question number one.
Question number one, what is the last letter of the alphabet, please?
Z.
Is the correct answer.
Ah, nice.
What is Z?
That's a word, not a letter.
Z is the last letter of the alphabet.
That's a word.
I put Z.
Yeah, all right. Put Z.
Does Z count? Z.
No.
Z does not count.
What is Z?
But I knew it was Z, but I just thought it was Z.
No. Oh, you guys got it all. We all got it wrong.
Because Z begins with Z. Oh,
question number two.
Question number two. Who was not born in London? Was it A, Charlie Chaplin? Was it B, Audrey Hepburn? Was it C, Jerry Springer? Or was it D, Bob Hope? Who was not born in London?
Really feel unsure about this one.
What are you narrowing it down to, Steve?
Listen, Bob Hope.
Is the wrong answer.
Oh, that's what
Bob Hope was born in Balham in London.
I put Bob Hope, too.
Did anybody not have Bob Hope?
Anybody still in?
Dave.
A, Charlie Chaplin.
No, he was born in London, too. He's an Englishman. Audrey Hepburn or Jerry Springer?
I thought Springer was born in London. He wasn't, huh?
Jerry Springer was born in London.
Oh, it's Audrey Hepburn.
It's Audrey Hepburn.
It's Audrey Hepburn. She's Belgian. She's from Belgium.
Yeah, oh, I should have known that being choice. Belgian.
Is that not English?
Question number three.
Where might you see a googly? A, at a zoo. B, at a cricket match. C, at an Indian restaurant. Or D, at an optician's?
Cricket match.
Cricket match is the correct
answer. Yes.
It is a type of bowl. Woo-hoo. It is a spinny, bowly thing that bounces in an awkward manner.
Question four.
Who is the head of the Church of England? Is it A, the Queen? Is it B, the Archbishop of Canterbury? Is it the Pope? Or is it the Prime Minister?
It's the Queen.
It is.
Oh,
Her Majesty
Canterbury.
The Queen. It's the correct answer.
Queen,
you know what? We're even building a house for you right now, Mr. Cochran.
Question number five, maybe the most important question on the test.
It's the most important question on the test, without doubt. What else would you, have in your tea after you've removed the tea bag? Would you have just water? Would you have B, milk? Would you have C, cream? Or would you have D, lemon? Please tell me the right answer.
Milk.
Thank goodness. Milk.
Oh, yes.
Milk. All right. Now we're halfway through. I got four out of five.
Four
Andrea?
Out of five. You're looking good.
I have two.
Two wrong or two right?
Two correct.
Two out of five, Dave?
I have one.
One out of five, Mary?
Three.
Oh, dear.
Three. All right. So we got one for everybody. Question six.
What do you do if someone bumps into you? Do you A, just ignore it? Do you B, say, excuse me? Do you say, oh, I'm so sorry? Or do you D, swear at the offending person?
You apologize profusely.
You apologize. Of course you apologize. Doesn't matter how hard they hit you, it's probably your fault. You apologize.
Wait, which one was that?
C.
That was C. Okay, good.
C.
Question seven.
Question number seven. What is so special about John O'Groats? What is so special about John O'Groats?
Actually, I had the other one, the pronunciation question at seven.
Yeah,
me too.
Oh, you have got the I beg your pardon. Okay. I beg your pardon, you do. I'm so sorry.
Yes, thanks for apologizing.
Question number seven. How do we pronounce aluminum?
Aluminum would be how we pronounce it. How we will pronounce it as citizens of the UK will be aluminium.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You're over-egging the U. Over-egging the U.
Oh, I am? Well, what do the judges say? Am I in or am I out?
Say it for me one more time.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. Aluminium.
I've got to say that's a no. I got to say I got that wrong.
Aluminium, but yes, you can have, but without doubt, you can have that. It was pronounced quite beautifully.
Aluminium.
Aluminium.
Yeah. All right. So you're being very kind as a judge to give us that one. Question eight.
What? Question number eight. That's the John O'Groats question. What is so special about John O'Groats?
I literally have no idea. I said it's because you have such wonderful names for restaurants. I said it was the name of a restaurant.
No, not name of a restaurant. Anybody else?
I thought it was a person who discovered London.
No, it was not that.
Dave.
No idea.
No idea is incorrect. Mary.
I thought it was a place full of goats.
No, that's groats, not goats. Paul, what's so special?
A very famous London place full of goats.
Whoa.
What? Seriously?
No, no, of course it's not.
Oh,
okay.
Dang. The most northerly point of Great Britain.
What
so
is it?
Sorry.
It's the most northerly town?
The northerly point of Great Britain. It's in Scotland. The most far north you can go is John o' Groats in Scotland. And that's what John o' Groats is.
That's tough. That's a tough question.
Sorry,
we all got to run.
It's a tough one. You know, and we'll let that one go. We'll let that slide.
Question nine.
Question number nine, how many time zones are in the UK? A, 1.
Tough.
B, 2.
Tough.
C, 9. D, 3.
I got to tell you, because of the Falklands, I went with 9.
9. It's not, listen, you can, I take it back, it's not a trick question. It's not a trick question. Promise you.
Yeah, still, I've already answered. 9.
9. No, wrong.
Is it 3?
Is it 3?
No, it's not 3.
Dave?
1?
1! We're a tiny little country. We only have one time zone.
But how can the Falklands, if it's in Canada, how can that not be one of your time zones?
Falklands, like, way, that's not still in. It's part of our empire, we like to say. It's part of our Commonwealth, but still not actual Great Britain, the country. So the answer, I'm afraid, is 1.
Wow,
we don't even vary by, like,
tough.
15 minutes. We're the same across everywhere.
All right, now listen, I have missed 3... out of 9. I am on the verge of failing. I have to get this last question. This last question, I must get it correct. How many were you at?
I have 4 correct.
Okay, you're not in. Dave.
I'll visit
I've
you.
Got 2.
Dave, you're
Dave,
so not in.
On?
Dave, you can't even watch soccer anymore on TV. That's how
yes.
out you are.
Yes.
Mary.
I have 4 correct.
Not a chance you're
what?
In. I am the only one who could be eligible for citizenship. What is the question?
I'm sorry, but surely even if you'd seen Benny Hill once, you'd get more than 4.
What do you think?
Question number 10. What or who is the Grand National? What's the Grand National or who is the Grand National? Is it A, the Queen? Is it B, London? Is it C, a famous theatre? Or is it D, a horse race?
I said it's a horse race.
Held at Aintree in Liverpool every April. It is the most famous horse race.
I'm in! I'm in!
Grand National.
I am in. Tell the Queen I will bring a spot of tea.
With milk.
Please do. Bring milk with it and not your crazy lemon.
Paul, thank you for educating us. Thank you for allowing me to be in. Is there a chance the other people on the show, clearly not as British as I am, is there a chance they could have a retest at some point?
Put it this way, are they keen to learn? Are they keen to turn? Are they keen to join the British way?
No.
No.
Yeah.
The answer is no.
For a couple days, maybe.
That's our friend Paul Coyne, live from London. News next.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
Steve Cochran Show continues live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. 312-981-7200 is the texter line, the phone number as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. This is show number 604. Why do we always give you the number of the shows? That's for legal reasons. You know, at some point somebody could say, hey, on show 604, Steve said, and I'm suing you. And then we have an easy way to go back and find it.
Is that why we do it?
No, I don't know why we do it. I just started doing it, and I just decided to keep doing it. The last living actor, Dean, by the way, is sick. We found out that Dean's not on the show today because he's sick.
He's not feeling well today.
No, I mean he's sick. He's sick, and he needs help. But he should be back tomorrow. We're hoping he's feeling better. So we are trying to scramble to see if there's anything worthy of mention by way of entertainment. I've got one. Do you have one?
I have one.
Go ahead.
No, you first. Because I'm trying to decide between which of the two would be better.
The last living actor from Citizen Kane died this week at age 100. Catherine Trosper Popper, who played a photographer in the film, who inquires, what's Rosebud, passed away at her home in New York City.
Oh.
Last living actor for Citizen Kane. The film was released 75 years ago. In 1941. Has everybody on the show seen Citizen Kane?
Yes.
Yes.
We had to see it in high school.
Yes.
Most of us.
And?
Loved it.
Loved
it. Didn't you like it? You didn't like Citizen Kane? Really? Well, I didn't like Gone with the Wind.
I liked Gone with the Wind. I respect Citizen Kane. I respect it for its, at the time.
Cinematography?
Yeah, at the time. Well, and then the story and all that. And but I think it's overrated.
You didn't like its film noir?
Well, it wasn't really film noir, really, was it?
Not really.
No.
I just wanted to see if you knew what that meant.
Yeah, actually, I do. It's cooler. Yeah. Remember, I'm the old cool dude, old dude, or whatever that guy called me. I just felt it was overrated. Yeah.
It was a little slow moving, but the ending, the ending of Citizen Kane.
But remember, movies that came out in the 30s and 40s were 3.5-4 hours long because it was a big deal to get out and go to a movie theater. It's like if you went to a play in Shakespeare's time, it'd be a 4-day festival. Because if you were going to leave a house and traipse to wherever the play was being shown, you had no interest in leaving after 90 minutes and going back home. There wasn't any internet. You would just go. You would spend 4 days at the Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, there wasn't an Uber that you can hop in and just go home.
Right, because we have more stuff to do now, which is why no movie should be longer than 90 minutes. It should be a law.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love the movies.
So anyway, rest in peace to that individual actress, Catherine Trusper Popper, who was 100 years old. All right, now what do you have?
All right, I have Bradley Cooper officially making his red carpet debut with supermodel Irina. Or do you call her Irina?
I think it's Irina. Is this the Sports Illustrated girl?
Yeah, it was back and forth. Are they together? Are they not? And finally, yes, they are together. And apparently there's already engagement talk. So they must have been dating for a while.
Why is there engagement talk?
Because it's what eonline.com
says. The entertainment television world that wants celebrities to get married as soon as they start dating are the same people that can't wait to talk about the divorce.
This is true.
That's ridiculous.
This is true.
All right, and Kim Kardashian is naked again? Is this news?
No, that part's not news, but you know they have the Kardashians have this habit. I think it's a disgusting habit, but they tweet pictures of themselves naked all the time.
Right.
Or like, who was the one? Kendall Jenner was eating a McDonald's and she tweeted a picture of herself half naked. So she was putting up some pictures and Bette Midler responded via Twitter saying, you know, put it away or no one really wants to see that. So they got into this Twitter feud and Bette Midler's got some really funny comebacks for her too.
You got any?
Yeah, I'll find it. I got off the Twitter page.
And is this Kim Kardashian thing something I should look for? I mean, I was like the rest of the free world. I have seen her naked.
Well, that's what Bette Midler was saying too. That's what she said. It's nothing we haven't seen before. And then Kim Kardashian threw in some stupid tweet about, isn't it past your bedtime? Okay.
Well, that's hilarious.
You know, the age joke.
It's not good if you're naked and an appropriate tweet would be been there, done that. You know, that's probably not a positive thing.
I guess pink is kind of ripping on Kim Kardashian as well, too, saying, shout out to all the women across the world. Use your brains and your strength and your work ethic. Not necessarily your body, your sex, your TNA. That's what she put.
But I would say this, that if you are going to maximize whatever God gave you in this life, it ain't brains, in Kim Kardashian's case. So maybe Kim Kardashian is maximizing exactly what she ought to be maximizing.
There's a couple things maximized in this picture.
Yeah, and artificially maximized. But this picture, for instance, too, she's got to be the one that tells her kids, A, why she married Kanye West and bore his children, and then B, why she decided that she wanted to keep taking naked pictures of herself. So that's between her and her people.
I wonder when people are going to get tired of her.
Don't you think they kind of are?
I think so, but they keep getting all this pub.
I mean, keep in mind, her entire career started with a sex tape. And a sex tape that it is generally believed was marketed by her mother. No problems in that family. It's 8:27. Dean's back tomorrow, and we'll see what sort of show business news pops up then. Did you notice, of all the yapping that Trump does, pardon me, of all the yapping that Trump does, he hasn't said anything about Marla Maples.
That's a great point, yeah. And who's going to be on Dancing with the Stars now?
Right. So maybe they've got a good relationship.
I think they
have a child together.
Yes, and
who's got to be? The kid's got to be 20 by now.
I don't think she's that old, is she?
She's got to be 20.
She might be.
And Ivana, apparently he says
she might be older than 20.
He says he has a good relationship with Ivana as well.
Ivana, the first wife.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is the thing about Trump, and you know how I feel about Trump politically and how I desperately don't want him to be the next president of the United States. But I think your relationship with your kids is a reflection of you. His kids seem to love him.
Yeah.
And not just for the money.
Yeah, her name is Tiffany, and she's 21.
Oh, she is 21.
Okay.
Yes. Boy. His kids, by the way, were at, they have been, even Ivanka, who was 2 weeks pregnant at the time when she was in New
Hampshire. Well, I think she's the most impressive of the three of them.
But, you know, Don Jr. and Eric are pretty impressive, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
I like his kids.
Don Jr. and Eric remind me of Don Sr.
Oh, what about Barron?
Oh, Barron.
Barron.
Can you imagine Barron in the White House?
Barron's the little one.
He's about 9 or 10, isn't he? Or is
well,
he 11?
You would just hope that the Trumps haven't spoiled him.
I don't think I've ever seen him without a suit on.
Yeah.
You should see, Steve. Your head is just going to explode
gonna
right
hey,
here.
Hey, speaking of
blow.
Suits, speaking of suits on kids.
Yes.
How about this? A gentleman's club for young men. Wait for it. It's coming up. I'll give you that story in a few minutes. 828 on 720 WGN.
Three straight on. Goal! Counters no good. Ball game over, and the Wildcats win.
It is 838, and Dave Innitt, Mr. Cat, it's been a really... it's been an amazing season for Northwestern basketball. When you factor in everything that's gone on, the fact that Coach Collins has these kids at 20 wins, how about that?
Yeah, it's the first time they have ever won 20 games during the regular season, and they've done it by winning their last three games. How about this, Steve? They won their last three regular season games for the first time since 1959.
And on the verge of the Big Ten tournament?
Which begins today in Indianapolis, as we mentioned, and Northwestern has a bye today. They play tomorrow against the Michigan Wolverines.
And Coach Collins joins us now. So first off, congratulations on this season, sir.
Thank you, guys. Good morning. It's good to be on the show again.
Well, you're always welcome here. And congratulations on finding a way to rally these guys with all the injuries and all the bumps in the road that you've encountered this season. You're at 20, and I think there's going to be more.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, our guys are in a good place right now. We're confident. I feel like we still have some energy. It's such a long season. You worry so much about keeping these guys energized and refreshed mentally more than anything. And I think the way we've played down the stretch, we've kind of gotten re-energized. Our guys are really excited about being in Indianapolis and having a chance to play Michigan, and we have a lot to be proud of this year, especially considering some of the injuries and adversity we had to go through throughout the course of the season. And we just stayed the course and kept working, and good things happened. So really proud of the guys, the way they've done the job they've done this season.
Yeah, Coach, you made a point on our postgame show on Sunday, which I hadn't really thought of, but when I asked you about winning 20 games, you brought up the fact that that was your number, and I think, and it's your dad's number too, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, absolutely. So in the back of my mind, you know, 20 was always, it's a special number. It was on my front and back a number of times on the court. So it's kind of a fun milestone to get to for the first time as a head coach.
What is it about this year that is special for you? As you look back, because look, there's nothing but upside to this program. What are you going to remember most? Is it overcoming adversity, a really tired cliche that sports gets used in sports too often? Or is it a certain win or a certain player?
I think it's part of it. I'm really proud of the seniors. When I think of this team, I'll think of those two guys in particular, Alex Ola and Trey Demps. You know, to me, they represent a core of guys that when I first got the job, a core of guys that welcomed me and believed in me from the start, without really having any reason to. Obviously, I came from a great program under a great coach, Coach K, but I was a rookie coach who had never called a timeout, never called a play, never made a sub, never done any of those things. And, you know, those two guys were part of a group with Drew Crawford and Jershon Cobb and, you know, Sanjay Lumpkin, who was in the program, who's got another year left. And, you know, they embraced me and they believed in what I was trying to do from day one. And to see them have great senior years and finish it strong the way they have, to me, that's what I'll most remember from this team. And you know, I know you know, we have much bigger goals and much better things we'd like to accomplish in the future. And I want those guys to know that they're going to be a big part of that and a big reason why we eventually get to where we want to go with our program.
You played Michigan 2 weeks ago in Ann Arbor, the only time you played them during the regular season, and you led most of the night. And I can't remember, Chris, an outcome that seemed that you took harder this year than that one. Yeah, I think it was a really painful loss for you.
Yeah.
What does that kind of set up as far as tomorrow, having suffered that loss that night?
Well, I hope we can use it as a positive. I think it's two good teams. I think it's two pretty competitive, you know, competitively evenly matched teams. You know, they certainly had a big loss losing their best player, Karis LeVert, who's an outstanding player, but they have a lot of other good players in the program. They, you know, were 8-9 in the seedings, so, you know, we're right there in the standings, very comparable with what we did this year. You know, I think that's probably the most angry I've been after a game, just because I wasn't angry with our guys with the way they played, because I thought we played really well. And I think that's why I was upset, because I felt it was a game that we should have finished the deal. We got off to a great start. We were up 17-4. They came back on us late first half. Then we started the second half great, 8 straight points, leading by 9. Game was kind of in our control. And in the last 5 minutes, we just kind of wilted away and allowed their will to go grab the game. And that was a frustrating one for us, I know, for the players as well. And hopefully we can use that as some motivation. It's postseason now. We just played these guys, you know, a couple weeks ago. I think there's great familiarity with both teams, and I think it's going to be a really hard-fought game. We're both playing for our lives. I mean, I think both teams need to win to keep playing, and that adds another level of intensity, especially this time of year.
I love the Big Ten tournament. I remember when it came in 1998, I believe, and it was new to the Big Ten, even though other conferences had it. And I think it's become really an institution with its own history now. It's really a great event. Indianapolis they do a nice job with it there. I know you guys are already there. The narrative seems to be, this thing is wide open this year. There's any number of teams that could win it. Do you see it that way?
I do. I just think our league has proven to be that way. Indiana had a great regular season, very deserving of being the regular season champs. But, you know, I believe that you know, a lot of us coming into this tournament feel like no one is unbeatable. There's a lot of really good teams, but on a given night, anyone can lose in college basketball this year. There isn't that one dominant team, and especially in our league, there's some really, really good teams, but there's no dominant teams. And so I think it makes for a really fun weekend. I think it could make for some surprises. I think you're going to have some great games. Indianapolis does a wonderful job with hosting these events. The crowds are, my first year, I remember the atmosphere was great in the building. There's such great fan bases with all the teams in the conference, and just a really fun event to be a part of. And, you know, we're excited to get it started. We kind of kick it off tomorrow with the noon local start. And I know our guys are really looking forward to the challenge and getting a chance to play Michigan.
You know, they always say, Dave, you know this, they always say that when you grow up, you start saying the things your father said to you. The voice of your dad and the voice of Coach K ringing in your head as you head into a postseason?
Yeah, they more than just heading into a postseason, they kind of ring into my head daily with all the things that I do. But I'm lucky to have those two guys as two of my, you know, the guys, the main mentors for me in terms
and,
of.
And two, obviously your dad, but Coach K couldn't be a bigger fan of yours. He beams when he talks about you.
Well, we have, he's meant a lot to me. He's a father figure to me. I mean, I was with him for about 20 years of my life. So, mm-hmm. You know, half of my life I've been with him as, you know, starting as an 18-year-old kid going in there and helping, you know, for the 4 years playing and then 13 years as an assistant coach. And so, I mean, I spent so much time with him, with his family. I am here where I am today because of what he's meant to me. So, You know, it's great to have someone who's been around that long be able to help guide me through good times and bad, and kind of help me as I shape my own career here at Northwestern. Go Cats.
We are really pulling for you. Obviously, we'll have the game tomorrow morning, and after you win tomorrow, we'll have the game on Friday as well. What time is the Friday game?
It would be the same time.
All right, that works for me. That's fine. Taking you through the championship game and the automatic berth into the tournament, where I have been named Northwestern's unofficial ball man.
Really?
That's right.
We hadn't heard that.
Neither. He was named by me. It was an under-the-table deal done when you guys were on location, and then we did our shooting competition.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And Coach said, listen, don't shoot. Just collect the balls that the players shoot.
Very nice. I think you're very qualified.
Hey, Coach, proud of you, man. It's been a bumpy ride, but a great ride, and it's the first in a long, long run for you. So keep it going.
No, thanks, guys, and I'm really excited that we've extended the partnership with you guys,
yep,
and being with GN and with Dave. It's fun, and look forward to many more good times with you guys.
Oh, you know what? He didn't ask him about the giant heads. Did you notice the giant heads?
He's busy coaching.
It's not that big a building.
I actually was locked into the game, and I looked over, and I saw Steve's head, and I got terrified.
Did it bring back shades of the free throw contest?
You know what?
I'm usually really calm and collected in the game. I looked over there, saw the giant head, and I was really taken aback. I got to be honest.
I want you to get that image out of your head. You got a job to do. Thanks, buddy. That's great. That's Coach Chris Collins, Coach_Collins. And again, we should remind people that don't know the story that on the day we announced an extension of the Northwestern play-by-play rights for football and basketball, the Northwestern Athletic Department did a wonderful thing, a really sweet thing. They put together giant heads of all of us. Mine, I think, particularly frightening, but yours and mine, Dave, both had sweatbands.
Yes, yes.
The purple, yeah, the headbands. You guys look good.
Yeah, it was a hot look.
Okay, I thought that was really cute.
And they were in the student section the next day.
And our heads,
the student
Florida
section, they gave some of the students the heads to wave around. Yes. Do we know if we got the heads back?
We're supposed to get the heads back.
Where are our heads?
We lost our heads.
Heads will roll.
We lost our heads.
I was in Florida when I saw that Facebook post in my head, and I go, what is my head doing in a Northwestern game?
Were the students really approving that?
Yeah, they were. You know, if I walk into Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis tomorrow and I see your head in the student section,
you'll know you're home.
I guess so.
My concern is some Northwestern undergrad used it as a coaster for a giant frat party last night.
For the keg.
Or a dartboard.
Or someone did keg stands on it.
I probably could. It's big enough to hold a keg. It's traffic trouble spots. Here's Mary.
The Blackhawks!
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
And as always, the Hawkopedia brought to you by Fresh Wave. If this campaign stinks, Fresh Wave is still trying to fix it. That's probably not great for Fresh Wave, is it? Even Fresh Wave can't fix this campaign. How about the official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks?
Oh, I like that.
That's probably better. What do you got today?
Well, let's talk standings a little bit. When you look at the standings in the NHL, you'll see the usual columns: wins, losses, points, home record, road record. But there's some others in there that have an important bearing on the standings. One of those is ROW.
ROW.
That means regulation and overtime wins. It's used as a tiebreaker in the standings.
So it's going to be wins in regulation or wins in overtime that are combined to create your ROW number.
That's exactly right.
I'm a fast learner.
The Dallas Stars have a one-point lead on the Blackhawks in the division. The Blackhawks have a game in hand, and they have two more ROWs. Hawks, 40 ROWs. They have 41 wins total, but only one of those came in a shootout. Dallas has 40 wins total, 38 ROWs. While a team gets 2 points for winning in regulation, overtime, or a shootout, what we see here is there is still a little more value in winning the game before it gets to the shootout. Because when it comes to this tiebreaker, the shootout wins get pushed to the side. Only one team in the league has more ROWs than the Blackhawks.
Caps.
The Eastern Conference leading Washington Capitals. You got it. but it's close. They have 45. The Blackhawks have 40. So ROW.
It's a big deal. Know your row.
Know your row.
And not your row con.
No, not. It's spelled different.
ROW.
ROW, and that's our Hawkopedia for today.
Dave is so educational. He really, really is. It's 8:58, and before we go any further, I will tell you that next hour we have Kim Fox live in studio. She's been endorsed by just about everybody.
Yeah.
The Trib, the Sun-Times, the Daily Herald, Senator Durbin, Congresswoman Schakowsky, Congressman Davis and Gutierrez and Quigley and Rush, the former governor, Pat Quinn. Speaking of a former governor, where is he?
He's been around. I've seen him at a couple events.
Should we invite him on the show?
I did. He'll be on the show at some point.
Well, what did he tell you when you invited him on the show?
Okay. He did. I said, Governor, you have to come back on the show. We miss you.
Was it the typical blow-off? Like, okay. Yeah, okay, you know, yeah. Hey, yeah, okay, I'll do that.
I took it as an okay, he'll do it, but not anytime soon.
Well, it's been a year. What's he waiting for?
He's laying low.
Okay, it's been a year. What's he waiting for?
I don't know. He wouldn't tell me.
Okay.
But he did say, okay.
This conversation will obviously get back to him.
So let me just
publicly say.
He's listening.
Governor, I'm sure he is. And if he's not, people that know him and will talk to him today are. Governor Quinn, we would like to invite you officially back on the show. We would be interested in your commentary on the current state of affairs.
I'll shoot him a text.
Well, look at you, hanging with the ex-gov. that's a thing. Let's see. Let's get to the news, and let's do it something crazy here and actually get to the news on time.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
.909, we continue with the Steve Cochran Show. Do we have an update, Mary, on my first grandchild and her appearance? 5 minutes? 5 minutes, all right. That's a big event. Do we have the red carpet out?
Yeah, we do.
She's doing other morning shows right now.
She's making the circuit, the talk show circuit today.
She's 11 weeks old. I told Ross, don't let her take the car. Kim Fox is here, and nice to meet you in person. Congratulations on all the endorsements.
Thank you very much, sir. It's nice to be here.
And there are commercials on top of commercials on top of commercials. What do you say to the public right out of the gate to say, listen, I'm the right person for this job?
I say that we know that our criminal justice system is broken, and it's going to take someone who has innovative leadership, who has both the personal and professional experience to lead us through these times of crisis. And I'm the person uniquely qualified to do that.
I guess, in the brief conversation we had at that time, you seem like a really nice person. Why would you want this job? Because honestly, this is not a shot at Anita Alvarez. The system is such a mess now, you really have to want to take this on.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to take it on because I grew up here. And as I've said before, I grew up in one of the worst neighborhoods here. And one of the things that you cling to when you live in an area that's been impacted by violence and crime and all of those issues is the belief that the system will be fair and just for you. And so to be in a position to have endured the things that I've endured in my personal life and in my professional life to stand ready at this time of crisis to lead us through this is something that I'm eagerly looking forward to. I'm still a nice person, but I'm eagerly looking forward to tackling these big issues.
Well, you've lived it, and I think we were talking about this with Steve, too. The campaign commercials are so heartfelt, and it actually shows you, you know, walking the streets and walking through the projects. You've lived there, you've been there, you've done it. How do you bridge the gap between those who don't trust law enforcement, whether it be the police, the prosecutors, whoever, and the establishment?
I think you have to start having difficult conversations that we haven't had in this county in a long time. I think we skirt around the issues when we talk about, you know, poverty and race and our criminal justice system and our educational institutions. And so one of the ways that you do that, particularly with the community, is you meet them where they are and you tell them, listen, I know that our system is in a state of disrepair. Let me hear you. Let's work together to fix it. I think the problem with Anita Alvarez is she's the only person in Cook County who doesn't think that the criminal justice system is in a state of disrepair, which makes her unqualified to fix it.
There are so many, I guess I've used this analogy before, but you know when you take Christmas lights out of a box at Christmas time and you got to untangle them, even though last year you said, no, I'm going to put them away and organize them?
Yeah.
That's the way all these interconnections feel to me at times, because if your primary job is convict and incarcerate, at a time that we know young black men are incarcerated at a level that is so dramatically higher And that's helped create this distrust for the police. You know, you've got a legacy with the neighborhood you grew up in, but you've got to do a job that serves everybody. That's a lot of Christmas lights to untangle.
Yeah, but I think what we've done, if I can use your analogy a little further, is we've started trying to just swap out one bulb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, maybe it's just this bulb instead of doing the work of untangling it.
Sure.
And that's not working. It's not working just trying to do one bulb at a time. I think the reason that our criminal justice system has been so fractured for so long is that we haven't put in the work to do it. I mean, when we talk about the issues that we're facing now with police accountability and the like, we have a long history in this city, in this county, with these issues, and we haven't delved into it. You know, we've got this police torture reparations fund. There's this acknowledgement that these bad things have happened 20, 30, 40 years ago, but we didn't do anything to change the culture, to make it more transparent for everyone that we've made steps to remedy this.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've seen in the last couple of months, this heightened angst and insecurity about what are we doing? It's because we haven't started untangling. And I think as a prosecutor, your job is to seek justice, and justice and public safety go hand in hand. But true justice means looking at all the factors that lead people into our criminal justice system, all of them. And crime, violence, and all of the other issues that are at play have to be part of the conversation.
Talking with Kim Fox, who wants to be the state's attorney, you have to be able to go after the bad cops. And by the way, I assume you'd grant this, that just like all kids aren't bad, no matter what color they are, certainly all cops aren't bad. So at the time where there's distrust of the police in the other parts of city government, how do you keep an eye out for those bad cops, yet have the good cops, which is the vast majority of them, trust what you're doing?
Certainly. I mean, I think the vast majority of the good cops want to make sure that the ones who are not doing what they need to do are taken care of. I mean, it doesn't serve the police officers who are running into danger every day. It doesn't serve them well when the public doesn't trust them because the few have tainted the many. And so, I mean, I think we have to work in collaboration. I've said all along, we can't deal with the violence in our communities if we don't have all three legs of the stool working together, the community, the police, and the prosecutor's office. And in order to rebuild that trust, you have to be able to have a good relationship with the police. They have to know that they're supported. And again, I believe that they want those who are doing bad things expelled from their institution so that they can continue to do the good work of serving the public.
Well, and to take that back to where I started, here's the other thing we know. In the poorest neighborhoods in Chicago, and I don't care who lives there, all those families want is the same thing the rest of us want for our kids, and that's to have them have a chance to have a better life than we had and to maximize their opportunities. And you know that better than most because you came from a rough situation.
Absolutely. As I said from the beginning, there's one thing that you want to feel, even if you don't have a lot of money, if you don't have a lot of resources, is that you get a fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationship that the people in communities that are impacted by violence that they have with law enforcement or other institutions is really important because it's the one thing that you hold on to, is that at least I'll be treated fairly. At least I'll be respected. When that's fractured, it has a ripple effect on other issues.
Kim, so many of the crimes that we report on, even as recent as Tyshawn Lee's alleged killer found in a different state, so many of those accused are back on the streets. How do you keep offenders, violent offenders, behind bars?
Yeah, I think we have to make sure that we're using our resources and our priorities correct. We have in our jail, we have the largest single site jail in the country. 70% of the people in that jail are there for nonviolent offenses. And 30% are there for the types of crimes that keep us up at night. So if we have a large population of drug addicted folks or people who are dealing with mental health issues, and we're spending all of our resources there, we're not putting the effort in the proportion to the violence that we're seeing. So I think we have to go after violent offenders, repeat violent offenders. I think we have to make sure that we have the data to show, you know, what are the sentences that are being given, you know, what are the offers that are being made in courtrooms, so that we can keep those who harm our communities off the street. And those who belong in our public health institutions, mm-hmm. those who have drug addiction issues or our mental health institutions, they should be out in those institutions so we can have the time and resources to deal with the violence that's plaguing our communities.
My own microphone. How long have I done this? That's a big part of the challenge you're going to face, as much as anything else. All the horrific things that can potentially happen and all the challenges of the office, You would become state's attorney at a time where there's less resources than ever to do a bigger job than I would argue has ever been asked to be done by the office. How do you balance that?
And again, it's a where are your priorities? We got an issue of violence in this.
Yeah, but I don't want your to-do list. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because your to-do lists, they're all important. How do you decide what's the most important? Is it a day-to-day thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I think our priorities are on the safety of our communities. We're on track to have one of the most violent years in the city of Chicago in some time. So keeping our streets safe is important. Tackling gun violence is absolutely important.
Sure.
You do need to rebuild the trust with the community to do that. And so, you know, they go in tandem. But I think also on the issue of nonviolent offenders who are taking up so many of our resources, working in partnership with other stakeholders in the public health sector, in the mental health sector, is important so that they can shift some of the burden, both financial and resource, so that we can deal with the violence. Because if people don't feel safe in their communities, if children don't have the opportunity to go outside and play, that's a reflection on our values here in the county. And so that has to be a priority.
The Tyshawn Lee thing is so disturbing. It's beyond disturbing. And understand the vein in which this is brought up. There used to be rules. Used to be rules in gangs. I'm not going to shoot your mother because I have a mother. I have a grandmother. I'm certainly not going to shoot a kid. How does this animal operate the way he does, and are there more of them out in the street, the guy that's been accused of killing Tyshawn Lee?
I can't even fathom what type of consciousness one would have. It was already horrifying enough to learn how this little boy died. It was even more egregious to hear what the original plan was. I don't think you can justify that type of evil.
Soulless. I mean, yeah, you're a dead inside. You're a dead man walking.
That's an evil that is
it's incomprehensible.
I can't.
So is there more of that out there? Because you, in your experience, and certainly your experience running for this office, you talk to cops, you talk to people in the neighborhoods. Is that going to be the prevailing attitude of gangs now?
I certainly hope not. I don't think so. I mean, it's so egregious. I think it was such a shock to all of our consciousness. It was really at a new low, I think, of what we've seen around crime and violence. And the communities where Tyshawn lived, I don't think that they could stand to have that kind of evil preying on their children. I mean, and the question becomes, what do you do?
Yeah, if you're not going to stand up for, I mean, I'm talking about the communities.
The community.
If you're not going to stand up over this, when are you going to stand up?
Absolutely.
He was moved out of Cook County Jail. He was moved to a facility in Champaign overnight because of the threats against his life, to which many would say, good, let it be. But I guess my question to you, Kim, is how do you prevent, not you personally, but how would your, I guess, your team prevent the gangs from operating from within the jail, too?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Again, we have one of the largest single-site jails in the country. Sheriff Dart will tell you his responsibility is to maintain safety within the jail and, you know, make sure people make it to their court dates. But we've got to start dealing with these gang issues on a more holistic level. I mean, we've got kids, the gang culture, you talk about where we are, it's not the same structure that it was 20 years ago. You got four guys getting together. You know, three of us, you know, we're now the Kim Fox posse.
Yeah, guys that control blocks as opposed to answering to one source.
Exactly. It's so fragmented, and it's getting younger and younger. And so we need to start intervening earlier. You know, we're talking kids as young as 12, 13, 14 who are graduating into gangs. And, you know, they're not in school. They're not involved in any activities. And that matters. And you know, I tell people, when we talk about Tyshawn, can you imagine the 9-year-olds, the other fourth graders who are in that classroom learning what happened? The scary part, though, is that there's someone ready to arm them right now.
Sure.
And those kids, those fourth graders, have a legitimate belief that they need to be armed because one of their classmates was killed in such a horrific fashion. That's what we've got to start working on. How do we deal with the trauma that those kids are dealing with? Because there's a strong likelihood that someone from that classroom may end up arming themselves. That is a strong likelihood. And it's
not a 9, a 10, 11-year-old that thinks they have to have a gun to walk to school.
And legitimately, their classmate was executed.
It's just outrageous. It's beyond outrageous. One of the main criticisms of the Anita Alvarez office was a lack of transparency in chasing down bad guys and putting them away. There is what the public deserves to know, and there are things that you cannot share. What's the balance there?
I think, you know, you're the gatekeeper of justice in the, as the state's attorney. And so you have to make sure that, it, you know, you are transparent without breaching your case. And a lot of these cases, I know that the public has an absolute right to know. But we also want to make sure that we can get and maintain convictions for those who commit crimes. And so there is a delicate balance. I think what we've seen with this state's attorney is stonewalling on everything, that it's there is no discernment about what you can share versus what you shouldn't share. And I think that lack of transparency, what happened with Laquan McDonald, wasn't simply that it was, you know, that this murder happened. It was the 400 days that intervened. And at the point when a decision should have been made to charge, we still weren't getting information. And the rush to charge only after the video was going to become public, I think, created those seeds of doubt in our criminal justice system that Anita Alvarez fanned.
I think Anita Alvarez has come under fire, too, a lot for her relationship with Mayor Emanuel. Relationship or maybe lack thereof. What is your current relationship with the mayor, and what would it be if you were state's attorney?
Certainly. I've known the mayor because I've had to work with him while chief of staff for the president of the county. We had a good working relationship. You know, he's the mayor of the city, which is within our county. And so we had to work together. And I'm glad to say that we've been able to work through some really difficult issues, you know, related to county and city relationships. As the state's attorney, my job is to be the chief prosecutor for the county. And that would mean having, I think, relationships with all of our elected officials, as well as, you know, our community partners. And I certainly would hope that he would respect my role as an independent prosecutor, having to do the things that are necessary to make sure that public safety is maintained and the integrity of the office is maintained.
You brought up your previous relationship with the county board prez, and a lot of people have made this an issue. I brought it up to her, and she was very defensive. But I believe we've worked out that rough bump in the road. In the meantime, how would you describe that to people so that maybe if they have a concern about your relationship to Preckwinkle, they wouldn't have after you tell them why?
Yeah, I would remind people that I have been preparing for this job as the next state's attorney my entire life, that my drive to get into public service and to get into criminal justice and juvenile justice began, you know, over at 624 West Division. So at the point where I got to work for President Preckwinkle, I'd been 15 years in public service. And I think she got a chance to see firsthand my commitment to these issues and my ability to get the job done. And she knew that I was a leader. So her support of me makes sense. And I think her vouching for my credibility as a leader makes sense. But I'm a public servant. I'm here to serve the people of Cook County. And that's an oath that I took as an assistant state's attorney where I worked for 12 years, one of the best jobs that I had. And it's an oath that I'll take again. And you have to put the people first in order to rebuild that trust and credibility. So I would assure people that my interest in this role is only to be a public servant, to make sure that the people of Cook County can have a state's attorney that they believe in.
We live in a world that wants change for change's sake. You know, I've maintained that while the mayor's made a lot of mistakes, blowing up the mayor's office is not the right idea. And maybe it's not the right idea to blow up the state's attorney's office either. You've laid out a nice case here of why you should be the next state's attorney. But there's a lot of people who have endorsed you, a lot of people who have supported you. And as cynical as the public is about politics now, what do you say to folks that go, she got a lot of power brokers in her corner. The first time somebody needs a favor, I don't know. What do you do?
You know, we've got support not just from those who are in elected office. I mean, it's really been across the board from, you know, the GPAC, the Gun Violence Prevention PAC, to the Sierra Club, to the National Association of Social Workers, to, you know, all the major newspapers. I think what that shows, there's a consensus that our criminal justice system is broken. The need for change has never been more evident than it is right now. I'm honored that they believe that the vision that I've explained for the office, my unique qualifications make me ready. The expectation should always be in the way that I've handled myself in my public career, that it is about making sure that those folks who live out in the community know that they're getting a fair shake and that I'm committed to their safety. That's why I got into the work. That's why I made it my life's mission to do this type of work. The support that I've received, the acknowledgement of that work, you know, while it's very complimentary, it is not what the job is.
A favor just because they endorsed you.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Nice to see you. I wish you luck. I know it's a rough slog doing any kind of campaign like this, but the city and the county are certainly invested in this race. And I can't tell you the last time the state's attorney's race had this much light on it. Oh my gosh. That's a good thing.
That is a great thing.
So all the best. Thank you for being here. By the way, I want to remind everybody, kimfox.com, F-O-X-X. That's the best place to send people for the website?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
927, Steve Cochran Show continues next, 720 WGN. Before we meet the granddaughter for an exclusive interview, and I'm pleased to find out that it is not something that I won't have an exclusive on. Apparently, she turned down Eric and Kathy
this
morning. So this that's
is her
good.
First radio interview.
Wide World of Business Cards. Want to say hi to several people, and I've been carrying these cards around, but meaning to get to this for a while. William Dawes, an Eagle Scout, a former Kid of the Week, I believe, but I know he was in here a bunch, and is a future radio star himself. He's a good kid. Sarah Presley, Development Advisor at Feed My Starving Children, an organization that really does nice work. Ken Miller, Vice President for Community Relations at Autism Home Support Services, the company that Amy works for.
Oh, yeah.
And Ken was out when we did the show out in Naperville. Deborah Newman, Marketing and Communications. Everybody there nice enough to be listening out in Aurora. Tom Buchanan from CRC Public Relations. And I met this woman, lovely woman, Pam Bartlett. She runs a business out in Naperville called Pino's Palette.
Oh, is that where you drink the wine and you paint?
Paint, drink, have fun.
Oh, sign me up.
It's a cool idea. Pinotspalette.com, as in Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir.
Yeah, P-I-N-O-T-S, Palette, P-A-L-E-T-T-E.com. Private parties, girls' night out, corporate events, date night. Honestly, who amongst a group of guys doesn't want to go drink and paint? Come on!
I'm in. Sign me up.
That's a cool idea for a business.
I have some as well. Mary and Alex from Diversity Driving Range said to say hi to you. Mary
What's
says
up, Mary?
Hi to
What's
you.
Up, Alex?
And Tommy DeSanto, your friend from Northwestern.
Jason DeSanto.
Jason DeSanto's cousin from Tommy DeSanto from Bub City. Saw him at the Illini event that I emceed last night, and he says hello to you, too.
Nice. Wide World of Business Cards. Let me go live to Ross Cochran. Now, Ross, how are you today?
I am the happiest to be here.
I bet you are. Would you like to introduce those two females?
I would. That's Mary Vandeveld. She does traffic.
No, no, I know that one.
Oh, this is my wife, Lauren.
Oh, pull that microphone up next to you, Lauren.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, there you
Hi.
Go.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing in Abigail Grace.
You're welcome.
Yes. And she looks fabulous. Did you mention what shirt she has on?
She has a Best Grandpa Ever shirt.
Where'd you get that?
Amy Cochran.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, she's wondering when she'll have a turn to talk. she is how old today?
11 weeks.
She'll be 12 weeks tomorrow.
12 weeks tomorrow.
12 weeks.
This information
tomorrow.
Just handed to me.
Are you saying hi?
How great is that?
Are you saying hi?
And every time she starts to cry, what do we immediately do? We bring her over to her
bring
parents.
Bring her over to mom.
Well, mom first.
Your mom first. If mom's not available, then I can tag in. But bring her over to mom. Mom,
but
calm her down.
You're producing the show in full while Kevin's away.
Yes.
And a couple of nights ago when you called, it sounded like there was some sort of insurrection
yes.
at the house.
Yes. Abigail was very mad that mom wasn't around and that she was stuck with dad. But we got through that.
But, yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Because I can tell you the first time that your mom left and Amy and I hung out together, and I think things have worked out okay for Amy and I. We're pals.
I would say so.
But she cried the entire time your mom was gone until about 10 seconds before she opened the front door.
Oh, there you go. Well, at least you got those 10 seconds.
Mom radar.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So now Lauren just returned to work. How difficult was that?
Yeah. Monday was my first day back, and it was difficult to leave.
Sure.
Especially knowing that, it was going to be a few hours before I got to go home. But I came home to a quiet house. Everyone was sleeping, so that was a very sweet kind of moment to return to. So
yeah.
It'll be an adjustment. But
well, you guys have done great stuff. You know, the thing, I've said this off the air, but to say it publicly as well, I hope everybody listening is blessed with a kid half as great as this one, because this is first grandchild. You know, this could have gone either way. This could have been nothing but trouble.
That's true.
And she actually turned out perfect.
We thought you were a little biased, but after having seen Abigail,
am I right or am I right?
She is adorable.
She really is.
So cute.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She did look like you for a while, Steve, but
yeah, no, fortunately,
like her mom.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And Dave, I've told you this before, you got to get yourself one of these.
I'm sure that will happen at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to rush this, but let's get on it.
It's not
Mary,
on my
you
got
to get one too.
I got two married.
Yeah, you got two married and no grandkids.
Two grand dogs.
Maybe Steve will share.
No, I don't see that happening.
No.
Abigail, any thoughts at this point?
You know, it's weird. She's saying as much on air as Mike Madigan has said.
That's exactly right, but she's a better interviewer.
That's very true.
That's true.
Although she did get a little in
That's
there.
True. There you go. That's more. Yeah. There you go.
You realize 1 year from today when she's on the show, we'll actually have a conversation.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
If she'll agree to the interview.
That's a good point. I shouldn't assume. Really shouldn't assume.
She's got people now.
I know her agents. We'll put some pictures up online so you can get a bird's eye view at the smiling, beautiful Abigail Grace.
Look how happy she is.
Abigail Grace Cochran, 12 weeks old tomorrow. Look at her posing. Unbelievable.
Yeah, she knows.
Unbelievable.
Where'd she get that from?
She got show business. Let's do this. We'll take a break, come back. Bill and Wendy coming up, 9:48. Thanks, Lauren. Made my day. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Got a couple technical issues we're working through. .953, some of the winners on today's show. And, you know, as my man Trump always says, President Trump, as I like to call him, everyone's a winner except people that don't listen to the Steve Cochran Show. They're all huge losers.
That could be true. He might have said that at some point.
A pair of tickets to see the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at Wheaton College's Edmund Memorial Chapel on March 23rd. Tickets at CSO.org. Apt gift cards. We have Apt gift cards, and we give those out. Pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, March 12th through the 20th at Navy Pier. It's just about to open. A MyPillow, guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. You can go to MyPillow.com and ChicagoFlower.com as well. LouMalnati's.com for Lou Malnati's Pizza. We love our friends at Lou's. And Tri-State Carpet and Floor in Elgin, where you can afford to be floored. Go to IWantToBeFloored.com. Everybody wants one of these Chicago sports team throw rugs.
They're so awesome. They're
cool.
Great.
All the winners, of course, get a Chevy Drive, Chicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel, travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer. Bernie Sanders was on the show at 7:10? Yeah.
This morning, yep.
Not that the time matters. You and I talked to Bernie after yesterday's show, ahead of last night. You can get the full podcast of this wherever you get podcasts. Again, I'll mention the WGN Radio app, WGNRadio.com, TuneIn Radio, and iHeart, just to name a few. Here's a piece of that interview.
Look, what I have always believed is that we have got to create an economy that works for all of us. And that way, when we have an economy today in which the top one-tenth of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, when 20 people own more wealth than the bottom 150 million people, when the average American is working longer hours for low wages and almost all new income and wealth is going to the top 1%, you know what? You could be a conservative, you could be a progressive, you could be anything you want to be. But that type of economy is not the kind of economy we need here in the United States of America. And that's what I've been saying for a long time.
And that's just a piece of the Sanders interview. Nice texture here from the 708. Make sure to savor these moments, Steve, from outrageous disrespect for life to a presidential front runner who would put his own interests before those of his constituents in a heartbeat. Holding a baby is one of those very few times it all seems right in the world. Isn't that nice? Not only is it nice, it's also true. We're back after this with Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
More than 210,000 people in Illinois are living with Alzheimer's disease. This number will continue to grow unless we can find a cure or a way to slow down the progression of the disease. The Alzheimer's Association invites you to help change the face of the disease by attending an upcoming Reason to Hope event on the North Shore, April 14th. I'll be hosting a luncheon in Oak Brook, April 20th, and in downtown Chicago, April 26th. Join us at one of the Chicagoland locations and help us in the fight to end Alzheimer's. Learn more by visiting ALZ.org/Illinois.
Okay, so you own a business. Not a startup, but a real existing business. And cash is tight. What do you do when you need funds? Go to a bank? Yeah, right. Waste a lot of time. Send tons of paperwork, only to find out you need to personally guarantee your home, firstborn, and everything in between. Or you call Next Wave Funding. Yeah, it's fast and simple, with a high approval rate for existing businesses and cash for many purposes. Equipment, inventory, expansion, cash flow, payroll. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-452-1595. That's 1-800-452-1595. When you call, you'll find out how to quickly and easily get the cash you need, up to $500,000 with no app or upfront fees. Funding based on your business, not your credit score. Plus, approvals in 2 hours and funds in 24 to 72 hours. Call Next Wave Funding today at 1-800-452-1595. That's 1-800-452-1595. This is by far the easiest and best funding available for existing businesses. Don't delay. Call 1-800-452-1595 now.
It is 9:57. Hey, I promise you I get to this story because I think it's a cool story with a funky headline. Remember I told you a gentleman's club for kids?
Oh, yeah. Is this real?
Yeah, and you thought, oh, what is he talking about? Here's what I'm talking about. And this goes kind of with Abigail being here today. What's cuter than a little girl in a dress or a little boy in a suit, right? Dressed up?
Nothing is cuter.
Right? It's great.
Love that.
An elementary school teacher in South Carolina to help his young men in his third grade class with their own self-esteem and acting and behaving right in life has created a gentleman's club to teach them how to be gentlemen.
Wow. How old?
These are third graders.
That's pretty cool. It's a neat idea.
60 students at Meminger Elementary in Charleston get together every Wednesday, so they're doing it today, and meet for the Gentleman's Club, subtitled Dress for Success. Raymond Nelson came up with the idea. He's a student support specialist at the school, got together with the teacher of the class. He said, I was thinking maybe if I have boys dressed for success, that would help them later in life. When was the last time you saw someone fighting in a tuxedo?
Very good point.
Right?
Or with a little pocket square that matches the color of the tie.
Yeah, and these little boys look great.
Yeah.
Club's motto is look good, feel good, do good. And Nelson and others in the community provide jackets, ties, and vests for the young men who can't afford it. But it's a really cool picture. And, Ross, you put this up on social media. It's the Gentleman's Club of the elementary school in South Carolina. A bunch of young men in ties, dressed very smartly. A couple of bow ties there, all looking good and feeling good. And learning how to be respectful and be gentlemen.
I think it's a nice idea.
It's a really cool idea. Thanks to Kim Fox. Again, she wants to be your state's attorney. Thanks to Chris Collins, your head coach for your Northwestern Wildcats. Paul Coit, who you may have heard, I'm the only one that passed the citizenship test, and I'm now eligible to return to the Queen's rule.
Okay, you passed, but you got 7.
Which is how many more than 4?
It's like a C minus.
How many more than 4?
I got 5.
5? Also, thanks to Karen Conti and thanks to Bernie Sanders. Again, that's on podcast, but mostly thanks to Lauren and her daughter, Abigail Grace.
We just bonded.
Yeah. She did like you,
didn't
she?
She did. You, yeah.
I mean, normally content. Women and you, it doesn't work out well, but that's
it's not true,
strong.
But she did like me.
Yeah.
She did.
Right now, Dave's daughter and his wife are both going, I knew I didn't like Steve. Bill and Wendy here. What are you guys up to?
I'm going to stare at Abigail Grace all day.
How beautiful is that kid?
Steve, as you know, I offered Ross $500 cash for the baby a couple weeks ago, but now upon seeing the baby, I'm going to up that offer to
$525. Yeah.
So they can think about that if you want.
I still don't like your chances. I want you to look around.
Look at the look she's looking
Turn around,
at, Bill.
Look at her. All right, Abigail Grace, look at that man and never talk to him again.
She's giving you a weird stink eye.
Did you guys see the shirt she's wearing? Best grandpa ever?
I have the best grandpa ever.
Who purchased that shirt?
She did.
Oh, she did
she
on her own?
She bought it herself. She wanted it.
Yeah, she went to Target and bought it.
She totally wanted that shirt. Nobody else could have it. What are you guys doing today?
Staring at Abigail Grace.
Oh, that's right. We covered that, didn't we?
Yep.
Well, it's hard not to.
Yep.
And enjoy it. We will be back here tomorrow and do this again. Tomorrow on the show, Rahm Emanuel, 7:45. Amongst the guests tomorrow on the
Good
Steve
score.
Show. Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Here's Wendy.